Chapter 1. Louis Wu. In the nighttime heart of Beirut, in one of a row of general address transfer booths, Louis Wu flicked into reality. His foot-length queue was as white and shiny as artificial snow. His skin and depilated scalp were chrome yellow. The irises of his eyes were gold. His robe was royal blue with a golden steroptic dragon superimposed. In the instant he appeared, he was smiling widely, showing pearly, perfect, perfectly standard teeth, smiling and waving. But the smile was already fading, and in a moment it was gone, and the sag of his face was like a rubber mask melting. Louis Wu showed his age. For a few moments he watched Beirut stream past him, the people flickering into the booths from unknown places, the crowds flowing past him on foot, now that the slide walks had been turned off for the night. Then the clocks began to strike 23. Louis Wu straightened his shoulders and stepped out to join the world. In Resht, where his party was still going full blast, it was already the morning after his birthday. Here in Beirut, it was an hour earlier. In a balmy outdoor restaurant, Louis bought rounds of raki and encouraged the singing of songs in Arabic and interworld. He left before midnight for Budapest. Had they realized yet that he had walked out on his own party? They would assume that a woman had gone with him, and that he would be back in a couple of hours. But Louis Wu had gone alone, jumping ahead of the midnight line, hotly pursued by the new day. 24 hours was not long enough for a man's 200th birthday. They could get along without him. Louis's friends could take care of themselves. In this respect, Louis's standards were inflexible. In Budapest were wine and athletic dances, natives who tolerated him as a tourist with money, tourists who thought he was a wealthy native. He danced the dances and he drank the wines, and he left before midnight. In Munich, he walked. The air was warm and clean. It cleared some of the fumes from his head. He walked the brightly lighted slidewalks, adding his own pace to their 10 miles per hour speed. It occurred to him then that every city in the world had slidewalks, and that they all moved at 10 miles per hour. The thought was intolerable. Not new, just intolerable. Louis Wu saw how thoroughly Munich resembled Cairo and Resht, and San Francisco and Topeka and London and Amsterdam. The stores along the slidewalks sold the same products in all the cities of the world. These citizens who passed him tonight looked all alike, dressed all alike. Not Americans or Germans or Egyptians, but mere flatlanders. In 3.5 centuries, the transfer booths had done this to the infinite variety of Earth. They covered the world in a net of instantaneous travel. The difference between Moskva and Sydney was a moment of time and a 10th star coin. Inevitably, the cities had blended over the centuries until place names were only relics of the past. San Francisco and San Diego were the northern and southern ends of one sprawling coastal city. But how many people knew which end was which? Tange few these days. Pessimistic thinking for a man's 200th birthday. But the blending of the cities was real. Louis had watched it happen. All the irrationalities of place and time and custom blending into one big rationality of city, worldwide, like a dull gray paste. Did anyone today speak Deutsche, English, Francais, Espanol? Everyone spoke interworld. Style and body paints changed all at once, all over the world, in one monstrous surge. Time for another sabbatical? Into the unknown, alone in a single ship, with his skin and eyes and hair their own color, a beard growing randomly over his face? Nuts, said Louis to himself. I just got back from a sabbatical. 20 years ago. But it was wearing on toward midnight. Louis Wu found a transfer booth, inserted his credit card in the slot, and dialed for Sevilla. He emerged in a sunlit room. What the Tange? He wondered, blinking. The transfer booth must have blown its zap. In Sevilla, there should have been no sunlight. Louis Wu turned to dial again, then turned back and stared. He was in a thoroughly anonymous hotel room, a setting prosaic enough to make its occupant doubly shocking. Facing him from the middle of the room was something neither human